You're listening to Wilderness and Wildlife, presented by the Gallatin Wildlife Association in Bozeman, Montana. This is a half-hour program featuring commentaries and interviews with wildlife and wilderness advocates relating to the unique natural environment that we enjoy in the wildlands of the West and across America. I'm your host, Ben Churchwell. Today we are speaking with two representatives from the Madison-Gallatin chapter of Montana Trout Unlimited, Andy Moore, who is the president of the chapter, and Connor Parrish, who is a Trout Unlimited project manager. The mission of the Madison-Gallatin chapter of Trout Unlimited is to conserve, protect, and restore Southwest Montana's cold water fisheries and their watersheds. Today we'll be focusing particularly on local stream restoration projects and community events hosted by the organization. Connor, Andy, thank you so much for joining me today.
No problem.
Yeah, of course. So could you tell us a little bit about your guys' backgrounds and how you came to be involved with Trout Unlimited?
Yeah, Andy, why don't you go first?
Okay, sure. So, when I was in college in Pennsylvania, I joined a fly fishing club that was part of our university, and that was kind of loosely tied in with Spring Creek Trout Unlimited in central Pennsylvania through some activities the chapter did, and moved to the further east at first after college and got involved with the chapter in Boston loosely. And then when I moved out to Montana in 2012, got involved first with Magic City Fly Fishers in Billings, and then got a lot more involved when I came out to Bozeman. In 2013, started helping out with the Banquet Committee, which is our one and only fundraiser we do each year. And with that, after a few years, got asked to interview for a board position and joined the board in late 2016.
I was a Trout Unlimited member when I was a little kid. My dad used to buy me the membership as like a birthday present because I get a few like random flies in a little plastic fly box thing. That was kind of my introduction to Trout Unlimited. I've only been working for Trout Unlimited for a little over 4 years. So I grew up in the Pacific Northwest and got my undergrad and master's degree over there in various areas of focus, but I've been doing kind of fish and wildlife jobs for a long time over there. And then my wife, she does similar work, and she got a job over here in Livingston, and I decided to come on over with her even and quit my job that was pretty awesome over there. And luckily, this TU opportunity came up immediately, and so I was super fortunate to join TU as one of their employees, and it's been really great to be a part of that side of it and also get to work with all the volunteers through the Madison-Gallatin chapter.
Right on. What sort of work is Montana Trout Unlimited involved in, and what does the Madison-Gallatin chapter focus on?
So maybe a structural question and answer there. So all of the entities within Trout Unlimited are actually separate entities. However, we work together frequently. So MGTU, our local chapter here, is a separate 501c3 nonprofit. All volunteer based, although we try to help with fundraising and funding of positions that are within the larger TU organization. So there's Trout Unlimited, which is the national organization, and they also have a small office with personnel here in Bozeman. And then there's Montana Trout Unlimited, which is its own organization that it focuses on issues throughout the state. And through Montana Trout Unlimited, there's actually a state council, which involves leaders from all the 13 chapters in the state that come together to talk about statewide issues, a lot of legislative issues that come up that are kind of beyond our local purview.
What are the primary concerns facing fisheries and aquatic habitats of the Madison and Gallatin watersheds?
Yeah, like from my perspective and kind of what, you know, I've seen and what I've learned in my time here is a lot of it's water availability. I think that's the number one concern, the availability of water and that water being cold. Trout are adapted to really cold water environments, and so they're very sensitive to any time that water is getting over 70 degrees, they're getting pretty stressed out. Colder water holds more oxygen than warm water, and they are adapted to that. And so when it gets warmer, it stresses them. They can't get as much oxygen, and so that can really be detrimental. So usually when we have more water in our streams, it usually means that the streams are cooler. So any way we can do to to increase the amount of water and decrease the temperature in that water is usually really beneficial. There's of course other habitat issues and things like that. You know, in the Madison Gallatin, you know, we've got in the Gallatin alone, I think 40% of our tributary streams are lacking in the appropriate amount of riparian vegetation that normally would have been along those streams. There's been, you know, historic land use practices, whether it's overgrazing, relocating streams, or doing log drives, sending, you know, large amounts of logs down rivers where they could be used at the mill for railroad ties. All of that has had legacy impacts on our streams. And so a lot of times we work to try to restore habitat. That's my job. I'm a project manager, so I identify and implement restoration projects. And then we have the water rights side of folks who work a lot. Actually, they'll go out and try and lease water from agricultural users and keep that water in the stream for fish, which wasn't a possibility until just a few decades ago. Andy, do you want to fill in kind of what the chapter's perspective is on some of that stuff?
Sure. Yeah. And I couldn't have said that better. I think that, you know, speaking from a layman volunteer standpoint on my end, you know, the water is obviously the most important thing we deal with. And I think that might be a misconception from the general public that we're a fly fishing organization or something like that. And while we do a lot of fly fishing activities, because the idea is that the lead in to experiencing that gets people more concerned and caring about conservation. So there are obviously a lot of fishing related activities, but they are with the goal of getting people to care more about water conservation. So, you know, beyond that, there's a lot of different subsets or chairs on our board that do different activities that I think a lot of people don't know about either. You know, before I became president last year, for about 6 years, I oversaw what's called our service partnership program. There's all these things going on. The service partnership is specifically related to veterans and first responders and their families and getting them, you know, involved in fishing, as well as that leading into conservation, because we see such a good return on those participants in those events coming out to actually help out with conservation activities and volunteer activities. We have our Lower Madison River cleanup that's been going on for over 30 years. That's a huge turnout every year. We get a lot of buy-in from multiple stakeholders to help organize that event. And, you know, it's I think a very forward-facing event where you see a lot of conservation-minded folks and volunteers, as well as sportsmen that are going out to clean up a river system that is overutilized by a lot of different recreationalists in our area. And you see the impact right there that day of what's pulled out of there. So that's a huge event every year, and we're looking forward to that on Sunday. Beyond that, there are you know, 11 people on our board with, you know, each has a different focus on a different subset of activities, whether it's general meetings and events, the service partnership, keeping track of the books. You know, there's forward facing elements and not so forward facing elements that happen there. But I think there's a lot of things that TU nationally at the state level and at the chapter level does that are kind of go unseen a little bit by the general public.
So we'll go into the specifics of certain restoration projects you guys are involved in. But just to give people a brief tour of your activities, what restoration projects is MGTU currently working on?
Yeah, so we've got, you know, working on a variety of different things. Locally in the Madison and Gallatin, we've got projects that we're finishing up on Leverage Creek, Dry Creek Phase 3, Mandeville Creek, which is right in the heart of Bozeman. We've got a project up on Camp Creek. And then we just got some more grants to do some additional projects on East Fork Cherry Creek, actually over in the Madison, and restoring a giant wetland complex up on South Fork Spanish Creek. But then the Madison Galveston chapter also partially funds my coworker's position, Ashley, over in the Yellowstone and in Paradise Valley as well. And she's got projects that she's working on Bangtail Creek, on Bracket Creek in the Shields. And then she's also got a project on Mill Creek, which is one of the biggest tributaries, the Upper Yellowstone in Paradise Valley. So there's a pretty big spread of projects that we're all working on right now.
You mentioned some of them. Many of MGTU's work in recent years has taken place on stream systems right in Bozeman's backyard. What is the significance of Leverage Creek to West Slope Cutthroat Trout?
Sure. So a lot of people don't know this who fish for trout in the Gallatin and Madison and Jefferson for that matter. But the headwaters of the Missouri used to have one native trout species, and it was the West Slope Cutthroat Trout. And they range from the headwaters of all those streams and their tributaries all the way down to Great Falls. The Lewis and Clark expedition caught West Slope Cutthroat while they were hanging out trying to figure out how to get past the falls down there. So it's the only trout we used to have. So our rainbows, our brook trout, our brown trout, those are all introduced species. And for competition with some of those non-native species, direct competition with brook trout is a problem for West Slope Cutthroat Trout. Hybridization, they're very closely related to rainbow trout, so they'll actually hybridize and they can kind of disappear as a genetic species through that process. And so their habitat degradation and competition with non-native fish, they're down to like 1% of their historic range within the Gallatin. And so Leverage Creek is one of those few streams that still holds West Slope Cutthroat Trout. So I wasn't around when they did it initially, but they built a fish passage barrier. So they basically installed a barrier to prevent those non-native fish from moving upstream. And then they protected in place a short stretch of Leverage Creek, and that is now just holds West Slope Cutthroat Trout. So none of those non-natives can get up there. And those West Slope Cutthroat Trout can just hang out in there unimpeded by non-native species. However, the problem is that Leverage Creek is a really small tributary. And when we have decreasing snowpack and things like that we've been seeing over the past few years, there's not as much overwintering habitat and also late summer habitat. It's like those kind of ends of the spectrum is when those fish get squeezed, right? There's not as much water, or the water that says there starts to freeze up. And so without really deep holes or a lot of water, those fish don't have places to seek refuge. So we worked with the private landowner, and we installed about 30 log jams with the help of a Montana Conservation Corps crew on about a half mile of stream there, with the idea that as those high flows interact with those log jams we built, that it will scour out deeper pools. So those fish will have some holding habitat during this time of year, and also during the really colder winter months. So yeah, so it's exciting to help out one of our few native fish and our only native trout.
Nice. As I understand it, those log jams were first installed in summer of 2024. Have there been any updates to the project this past season?
Yeah, we haven't gone back in there yet. It's on my list to do. We're actually going to go through there and do some electrofishing surveys. We'll go through and sample those fish and see if they're actually getting in there and using those log structures. So I'm excited to do that later this year, hopefully sometime in September when the water cooled down a little bit more and they aren't stressed.
I think one of the biggest pieces of anecdotal feedback we get from anglers is some of the fish barriers that have been put in for West Slopes and other areas over the last 10 years too. I think when I joined the board in 2016, one of the projects we had just wrapped up was over at Cherry Creek on the Madison, the fish barrier there. And you're starting to hear a lot of folks that are out on the lower Madison talking about catching nicer age class West Slopes in the lower Madison, and same thing starting to happen over on the Gallatin from the North Fork of Spanish Creek as well. So kind of a cool thing over time. You're starting to hear, people that are out there enjoying the resource, seeing those native fish increase in population and in age class.
Nice. That's encouraging. Mendevell Creek is a tributary stream that runs right through the city of Bozeman before reaching the East Gallatin River. It has also been a focus of MGTU's restoration work. What is MGTU's concern with Mendevell Creek?
Yeah, so Mandeville Creek is a tributary of the East Gallatin, and it's this little spring creek that flows through a lot of the heart of Bozeman. And so it's just been relocated and just kind of moved around and buried and kind of been treated as an afterthought and an inconvenience, which makes sense. I mean, Bozeman was being developed and they were kind of moving it out of the way, because at one point it was probably just a really swampy spring creek. But it picks up a ton of just urban influence from runoff with that, a bunch of fine sediment. So it's listed for excess nutrients, nitrogen and phosphorus. It's also got a lot of fine sediment issues in there. And so all of that water then ends up going into the East Gallatin. It also gets return flow from Farmers Canal. So Farmers Canal is one of the bigger irrigation ditches, which actually takes water from the main Gallatin, the West Gallatin, runs it all the way across the valley, and then dumps into Mandeville Creek, and then that goes out in the East Gallatin. So and that can be a significant amount of water sometimes, like this time of year, that's coming out of that canal. And it's actually pretty cold water going to the East Gallatin, which has chronic temperature problems. So the big concern there is that Mandeville Creek just doesn't have any functioning habitat upstream. And there's this large reach in there where there's going to be some development happening. There's a large, about 26 acres that aren't going to be developed, that are protected because it's a wetland. And we are doing restoration work there to hopefully improve the habitat, not just within the project, but also clean that up. So when it gets out to the East Gallatin, it's cleaner and colder to help benefit that fishery. Because again, the trout out there really require clean, cold water to thrive. So it's a really, really cool project we've built so far. I think about 87 log jams and beaver dam analogs, which are structures that mimic beaver dams out there. A lot of it with Montana Conservation Corps crews or volunteers, and it's a really exciting project.
Nice, yeah. The beaver mimicry there is especially fascinating to me. What role does beaver mimicry play in that whole restoration process?
Yeah. So, I mean, you can't talk about beaver mimicry without talking a little bit about history. But I mean, the Gallatin Valley would have just been completely covered in beavers and beaver influenced streams. Again, when Clark came through here, they documented how many beavers were like just all over the place, and how kind of painful it was to navigate the East Gallatin River with all the dams and things of that nature. But then when the beaver trade happened, a lot of this area got trapped pretty heavily. And so when those beavers were removed, their dams left with them, because the beavers constantly are repairing their dams as they're damaged during high flow events. So when those beaver dams all blew out, then our streams started draining their water a lot faster than they would have historically. So instead of water staying in our systems and slowly draining throughout the summer, they run off a lot faster in the spring, and that water leaves the watershed. And so that results in lower late season flows. So additionally, those beaver dams capture a ton of fine sediment behind them, and they also push flood flows out onto the floodplain, where that fine sediment can then deposit out there as well. So what we end up with is, you know, our water runs off faster, and we end up with a lot of sediment in our places where fish would have normally been like spawning and things like that. And trout need really clean gravel to lay their eggs in. So a number of things with the beaver mimicry structures or the beaver dam analogs is they kind of slow down that water and force it to stay there a little bit longer, where it can be absorbed into the floodplain. They capture fine sediment so it doesn't get down into our bigger streams like the East Gallatin and Gallatin and impact spawning gravels. It also, because the water has a lot of nitrogen and phosphorus in it, if you can slow that water down, that increases the amount of time that plants can actually take that those nutrients out of the water. So it can help clean up the water quality there as well. So they do a number of good things. And then on the wildlife side of things, they kind of make really great habitat for wildlife, because they kind of stimulate the growth of riparian plants by raising that water table again. And then ultimately the goal is for beavers to come back in and take over their structures, because I do not have the time to maintain all of those structures.
Right. I understand the installation is semi-recent, but since the installation, have there been any updates? Are beavers reoccupying that habitat at all?
Not yet. I kind of hope they stay away for a little while. There was a report that one tried to cross Frontage Creek and got Frontage Road and got hit by a car, which is unfortunate. But I would prefer they'd stay out of there for a good 5 years, so our plants that we're putting in the ground can get big enough to withstand some of their browsing. But it's working really well. It's kind of incredible the amount of sediment some of those things are catching, and the water table's higher. We have groundwater monitoring wells with the Department of Environmental Quality, who helped fund the project, has been doing monitoring out there, and they've seen the water table come up, and the plants are responding for sure. So I think it'll be in a really good place for beavers to show up there in 4 or 5 years.
Nice.
Wow. Yeah, they will.
Perfect. Since 2019, Montana Trout Unlimited has been working on several restoration projects on Jiraiya Creek, another tributary to the East Gallatin River. In fall of 2024, as you mentioned, phase 3 of this restoration was implemented. What was the purpose of that third phase?
Sure. So So we've done a lot of these phases that we've been working on. So we had a really great partnership with one of the private landowners out there who reached out to us about doing some projects. And so back in 2019, we first installed a fish passage structure. Dry Creek historically used to intersect Dry Creek Canal as it ran across the valley. And a lot of water from Dry Creek would end up going down that canal and not make it out to the East Gallatin River. And the section between the canal and East Gallatin was a little under a mile of stream. And frequently that would dry when we dry up. So what we did is we disconnected those two systems. So now the irrigation ditch runs along its merry way and the stream goes underneath the irrigation ditch, and now water stays and it's connected to the East Gallatin all the time. So that once we got that connection fixed, from Trout and Lino's Limited's perspective, we like to work on systems that help the public, the entire resource, so that public can benefit it as well. So now that fish can move up and down and spawn in Dry Creek and also return to the East Gallatin River and do their thing where people can fish for them, we started working on habitat upstream. So the first couple phases, we restored 50 eroding stream banks. These are anywhere from 10 to 15 feet tall, vertical banks that are just eroding and delivering tons of fine sediment into the stream, which again is not great for fish. And this has occurred again because land use practices and also the loss of beaver on the landscape that used to hold that sediment behind their dams for so long, but they've been lost. So we did 50 banks in those first two phases, over 2 miles of stream. And now we just did 14 more banks on another mile of stream. So, which is really exciting. So basically we take these eroding banks and we slope them back to like a 2-to-1 grade. So then when streams flood, which they naturally do, that water can actually dissipate its energy as it kind of expands instead of being trapped in this narrow narrow channel where it's just constantly eroding and causing all this fine sediment to go into the system. And then we go back in and we revegetate those banks afterwards to stabilize them, which is pretty cool. The first two phases, those banks held up to like a really big flood event 2 years ago that happened up Dry Creek. Beavers have moved back into the system because they can actually build their dams and they stick around because they're not building in a U-shaped channel anymore. It's, you know, a little bit broader creek bottom. So yeah, so the first two phases have been really successful, and now we're working on the revegetation side to stabilize those banks for the long term.
Nice. Okay. MGTU is also engaged in work along the South Fork and West Fork of the Madison River. Could you tell us a little bit about these projects?
Sure. So some of those are more kind of like in the preliminary stages. So the South Fork Madison, we're working with the Forest Service. There's a one of the South Fork Road crosses the South Fork of the Madison up there. And the South, it goes through a really, really broad floodplain. But the stream itself goes through one kind of narrow bridge. And so what we're going to do is we're working with the Forest Service to go through, and there's about an 800 foot, or say 800 yards, say yards. 800-yard causeway that's kind of bisecting this floodplain and preventing water at high flows from moving through that part of the floodplain, and instead forcing all the energy of that river just right underneath that bridge. So that causeway, what we're going to do is work with the Forest Service to put in a bunch of culverts to perforate that causeway. So when there's high flow events in the spring, water can kind of move across that floodplain, keep it all reconnected for wildlife and things like that, and also so fish can move back and forth and other aquatic organisms underneath that causeway, and that'll take the pressure off the river just going underneath that bridge. So it's kind of a way to get out ahead of what future impacts might result in. If there was a big flood out there and all that energy was going just underneath the bridge, that could result in the channel kind of incising some more and then drying out the floodplain, which wouldn't be great for the aquatic and all the wildlife habitat out there. So
sure.
And then the West Fork Madison, we're working on that with the Forest Service. It's a really popular area for camping and recreating for a variety of activities, and for good reason. It's really gorgeous back there. But if you go around and look at all those campgrounds out there, there's a real lack of riparian vegetation from those banks just kind of getting trampled from dispersed camping and things of that nature. So we're just working with the Forest Service to hopefully come up with some ideas to kind of protect some of those stream banks and maybe even do some plantings as well to help stabilize them so they aren't so easily erodible.
Sure. We are kind of cutting close on time, but I know you had mentioned a few other projects that MGTU is involved with. Are there any highlights from these projects that you'd like to mention real quick?
Yeah, so I think beyond kind of the field work that's happening, you know, we're gearing up for kind of what I would refer to as our season coming up here. So we have October through May, we host general meetings, get organized for those. And then in February, we're doing our annual fundraiser, our Trout Fest banquet. And beyond that, you know, there's been a lot of discussion, you know, between our organization, MTU and TU National, throughout the summer, just about legislative ongoings. You know, we really rely heavily on Clayton and his expertise to kind of go through that with us. But I think we have a really good slate of presenters for our general meetings coming up this fall. Those are the second Wednesday of every month from October through May, and typically hosted at the Grand Tree. We are looking at having a few different venues just because hotel space has become harder to occupy here in Bozeman with the growth. So look out for those on our social media. I think the other exciting thing that we've had in the works for a long time that's starting to come to fruition is you know, just last year we added a Ennis outreach coordinator. So we're hoping to do a general meeting this spring down in Ennis. I think we're looking at trying to do another one down in Big Sky, and then starting to get the ball rolling on trying to have more outreach in West Yellowstone. One of the pieces of feedback for our chapter specifically over the years has been that it's been really confined in the Gallatin Valley here in terms of the activities that we do for our membership. And we've been trying to branch out and hopefully accomplishing more of that throughout the season here.
Nice. What can prospective members expect from these meetings once they start up come this fall?
So we always try to balance it out with some that are going to be fun activities for, you know, like, for example, our chili cook-off that happens every November. You know, that's a big one. People come out and try to compete for prizes that we have. And then, you know, in the doldrums of winter, usually in either January or March, we're going to do things like fly tying night and fly tying instruction. A lot of people bring their family out for that to get their kids involved as well. And then, you know, beyond that, we usually work with FWP to have some presentations on the state of different river systems. And that's not always, you know, designated to the Madison Gallatin rivers. A lot of times we'll have them present to our membership on whether it's the Yellowstone after a train accident or the state of the Big Hole, which has been in the news a lot in the last 2 years. You know, given updates on what's going on there with studies and data that's coming out. So it's always going to be a mix of, you know, fisheries and cold water resource data that our membership cares about, as well as trying to provide some fun nights like the chili cook-off and a presentation this fall on fishing in Patagonia.
How can people support the work of MGTU?
I think the biggest thing is to get involved and kind of show up. You know, we're always leaning on people to help with volunteer activities. And, you know, the biggest one we have throughout the year is our annual banquet. So coming to the committee meetings or sending us an email through our website to kind of sign up for getting involved with that committee. the more hands on deck, the better for that. And, you know, Connor donates a lot of his time generously to that every year to be our MC and kind of lead the show for us. And we're greatly appreciative of that, but it takes a lot of people to reach out and solicit donations for the event and organize the venue. So we're always looking for that. It's the one thing we do every year to raise funds to help fund some of these projects that Connor went through.
That's about all I have. Thank you guys both for dedicating your time to doing this interview. It's been great hearing from you. Really exciting hearing about these projects and how they're going to develop over the next coming years and all the community events that you'll be leading this season, as well as moving forward into the future. So thanks awesome. For coming in.
Yeah. Thanks for having us.
Appreciate of course, you
yeah. yeah. Good to see you, Andy.
You too, Connor. Take care.
Perfect. This has been Wilderness and Wildlife, a presentation of the Gallatin Wildlife Association in Bozeman, Montana. More information about the association and its activities can be found on its website, www.gallatinwildlife.org. To hear more of these half-hour interviews, go online to kgvm.org or to buzzsprout.com and scroll down to Wilderness and Wildlife. Thanks for listening. I'm your host, Ben Churchwell.